Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello, and welcome to another Quarren Stream edition of The Cinema Clash. I am Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net, joined as always by my remote co-host Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. And this week we're talking Disney's Mulan, the on-demand chess movie Critical Thinking, and two very different offerings from Netflix, the rom-com Love Guaranteed, and the drama I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Hey, Charlie, where do we start?
I believe we started congratulations. You know, for a long time, we only had one podcat. Eddie, you can usually hear him maybe once per episode meowing in the back or not knocking something over. Right now, he's chasing a ball around the living room. But there's a second podcat. There's a second podcat now. Hannah, what did you do?
I went and adopted a rescue from Louisiana whose name also was Hannah. So I could not leave her at the shelter. So I now have Hannah C, meaning Hannah Cat, to distinguish us, but she's still kind of a kitten, and so she will probably disrupt things at some point, giving your podcat Eddie a run for his money in terms of chief podcat status. So we will see what happens, but she's a cutie.
Yeah, Eddie's a lot older. I don't know if he's necessarily slower, but I don't plan on ever having the two of them meet. We don't need a black hole in the universe forming. But you went ahead and you saw the week's biggest film, Mulan, and its special release. It is not only on Disney Plus, which you have to watch it for $7 a month, but you also have to pay $30 more to see the live-action remake of Mulan, and you saw it. Are we raving? Are we meh? What are we thinking about Mulan?
I liked it. I found it very just family-friendly, entertaining. It is $29.99 now if you want to watch it right away on Disney Plus. They're giving you what's called premiere access to watch it for $30. If you've got enough viewers and popcorn to kind of create a movie night for the kids, you know, either in your home theater or in a driveway nearby, then I think it is worth spending $30 to sort of have this family-friendly film to watch. Otherwise, you know, you can wait and watch it for the standard $7 a month. It's, you know, there's something about, I know you didn't want to watch it because you're like, why do we need another version of Mulan? But we're talking the original animated version, 1998 G-rated animated version, with a lot of song and very popular. I enjoyed that one. This time, though, it's live action. And so you've got this trade-off. You've got strong acting and cool scenery and special effects. And to me, I felt like I was watching a Chinese version of Wonder Woman. That's who Mulan was to me. So the story, essentially the same. It's a legend. It's a Chinese legend about this warrior named Mulan who risks everything for the love of family and country. When the emperor decrees that one male from every family has to join the imperial army to battle these invaders, Hua Mulan secretly masquerades as a man, Hua Jun, to go in place of her ailing father, who really, he'd paid his dues in defense of China. He was an honored warrior, and she kind of sneaks off in his place and is just, she's got skills. She's a mad, skilled warrior, and it's just a shame that she wasn't allowed as a woman to reveal her strength. And so because of that, during the time that she's masquerading as a guy, as a boy, she can't really harness all of her inner strength and reach her full potential while she's living this lie. But eventually, you know, the truth comes out and she's managed to command the attention and respect of her fellow warriors, of the emperor, even of her enemies. And I enjoyed it. I did. It's treading, it's a retread of story, but the girl who plays Mulan, probably going to sort of crush her name.
I'll go ahead and help you. It's Liu Yifei.
Liu Yifei. So Liu Yifei is, she's really good. She's very endearing to watch. She's, you know, she's just, she's got moves. And her father, I don't know if it would be Ci Ma or Ma Ci is the actor who plays him, but, you know, is very good. It's just a, you know, it's just this very watchable film. It's from acclaimed New Zealand director Nikki Caro, who did Whale Rider and The Zookeeper's Wife and McFarlane USA. So she kind of knows how to deliver those family-friendly action-adventure films. And so the way I look at it is, yeah, it doesn't break any new ground, but I don't think it also doesn't do harm to the legend and the enduring message of Mulan. And that message is basically, don't let anyone stifle your chi, Charlie. Charlie. Don't stifle your chi, Charlie. Because, you know, it could come in handy someday to save a dynasty. And so I liked it. And I think your kids are probably still too young for it, maybe. Wouldn't be all that interested. But for the slightly older, you know, 8 and up, I think would still enjoy watching this one.
I never saw the original 1998 cartoon version, because it was 98. I was a senior in high school, freshman in college. Mulan was not on my plate back then. And I never, you know, that's the phase of my life where I never really caught up on anything that Disney or Pixar was releasing back then. So I do have a black hole of children's films from that decade. However, Mulan arrives with scandal. It's in the news. It's controversial. Liu Yifei, she's Chinese, and she got on Twitter last year when Hong Kong police, Chinese police, started turning the screws on Hong Kong, and then, you know, all the pro-democracy activists flooded the streets, and she got on Twitter and said, shame on Hong Kong. I support the Hong Kong police. Therefore, hashtag boycott Mulan has been trending all day. Hong Kong, Taiwan activists, Thailand activists have taken it up, and it's hashtag Milk Tea Alliance, because they said we all love milk tea, and that's the code. Milk Tea Alliance is boycotting Mulan because of Liu Yifei's pro-authoritarian views. I don't know how much weight that's going to hold in suburban America, who just wants to entertain their children. But
I don't think it will, and I think it'll make the Chinese very happy.
Yeah, it'll make the Chinese happy. But I love me a good scandal, Hannah.
You do, but I can't see that particular scandal casting too long of a shadow over the success of this particular film. And again, it's because there's not all that much out there in terms of family-friendly fare to really watch that's new, that's like, you know, and it's still a girl power movie. And the trade-off really for me was that I love music in, you know, so I watched all those old Disney movie musicals, whether animated or live action. And it was very hard when they actually play the orchestral part of Honor to Us All, the song that most people will remember from the animated. And she does. She still brings Honor to Us All. And the song will start running through your head when you're just hearing the instrumental, even though nobody breaks into song in this film. But, you know, it's, I don't think that the controversy will have all that much of an impact. And I didn't realize that you hadn't even seen the animated. And so it's like, why didn't you go ahead and watch this one? Because I think you might have enjoyed it. I think you might have enjoyed the live action more than you would have enjoyed the animated.
Because instead, yes, and there's Podcat in the background. He's jealous. He knows there's another cat out there, so he's getting his in. I wanted to watch the new Charlie Kaufman. He is on Netflix this week. He adapted the novel, the 2016 Canadian novel, I'm Thinking of Ending Things. That was written by Ian Reid. Charlie Kaufman, a certain sect of moviegoer knows automatically who that is. We know him. Not only he's been nominated for 4 Oscars and won one, he wrote Being John Malkovich, which blew open my skull in 1999 when I saw that. He won his Oscar for Best Original Screenplay for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which holds up. People still get teary-eyed over the relationship between Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet in that film. More recently, he directed Anomalisa, which was nominated for Best Animated Film. Roger Ebert said his Synecdoche, New York was his favorite film of the entire decade, of the first decade of the 2000s. So people know Charlie Kaufman and are on the lookout for new material by him. So I was first in line to watch I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Now, on the surface, it is very simple. Most of it takes place in a car. Just 2 people driving in a car to meet the parents, Jesse Buckley and Jesse Plemons. They've been dating for 6 weeks, and they're going to go meet his, Jake's, parents up in, it looks like upstate New York, rural. They live out on a farm, so it takes a couple hours to get there, and they're really smart. These guys are intellectuals. They're talking philosophy, they're talking film, they're talking books. They're really smart, and they seem like a nice couple, but in her head, we're listening to her voiceover. She's thinking of ending things. You know, she just doesn't see a future. They get there. We meet the parents, played by Toni Collette, who's got a hereditary kind of vibe going on. David Toulis, he is from Anomalisa. He returns again to support Kaufman. David Toulis is the dad. And then, I don't want to give too much away, but pinning a genre on this is tricky. I'm going to call it a metaphysical thriller. Now, when I say thriller, I don't mean fists are flying and bullets are being shot. Not at all. Thriller is more just dialogue. All they do is talk. And the storm gets worse. Things change. People's clothing changes. People's age changes. This is unanchored in time. There's different levels of reality. This is open to interpretation. Now, a lot of audience members don't like to hear the words, this film is open to interpretation, because that means you can think anything and be right. Nobody's wrong. And there's, man, I have my interpretation of this. And you know what I think? You need to be familiar with Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma. That would pay dividends. If you're familiar with that particular piece of musical theater and dance and the basic story of Oklahoma, I think that would help you.
Really?
Yeah. It's.
Is she just a girl who can't say no?
I saw Oklahoma once, the film version, never, on stage. I saw the old film version. I think it was 2000, 2001. So I'm familiar that, Rod Steiger was one of the, Shelley Winters, but she was after, the regular cowboy guy. That's all I remember about Oklahoma. And, Sorry with a Friend, John Top. I really enjoyed I'm Thinking of It. It's so cerebral. It's so contemplative. I could be right about what I think. I could be wrong. And maybe there are no firm answers, but it's a great adapted screenplay. I wouldn't be surprised if he's nominated again for screenplay. It's an acting ensemble powerhouse. Personally, I think Toni Collette and Jesse Buckley walk away with it, but David Toulis is getting raves as well online. This is a very intriguing film, Hannah.
Well, I love both Toni Collette and Jesse Buckley too. I saw her last year in the film Wild Rose, that where she sang in that one. So I don't know if she sings at all. Maybe sings something from Oklahoma.
Actually, Jesse Plemons sings.
Really,
he's the singer this time around.
Interesting, but it's a very strong cast. It seemed from the get-go that it was going to be more of a Charlie movie. With that more cerebral take. So I guess I would just have to be in the right frame of mind. If it sort of manages to break into that, whatever the award season will look like, then I would definitely, look to catch up with it, mostly because of the cast. When it's one thing if I'm not all that thrilled with the synopsis of a film, but when you've got a really strong cast like that, it sort of lends a little something extra to encourage me to see it. So I'll probably get around to it.
Yeah, I hope you do. I don't know if it will be remembered for, you know, I could see Collette being pushed for supporting or even Buckley for lead, but you know, it's still early. You know, theaters are opening up. Their films are actually, instead of being pushed back to 21, they're coming back to 20. So this could get lost in the shuffle, but adapted screenplay is usually one of those categories that's tricky and people kind of try to squeeze stuff in there. So there's a very good chance this sneaks in to that category. But now I want to stay with Netflix, and I want to try a little experiment here. We've been doing the Cinema Clash podcast for close to now 5 years, Hannah. We know each other's tastes. Like if we see a movie, I just kind of know what you're going to say about it. Sometimes you surprise me. Sometimes you like something I don't think you will. Sometimes you don't like, you know, but it's rare. I just kind of know what Hannah likes. So with the movie Love Guaranteed, I want you to give my review.
I think your review would be the, this sucks.
Because you know what I like. Sometimes I surprise you, but I want to know if you think you know what I thought about Love Guaranteed.
That's what I would have thought that you would think about it. I think it would be very simple that you would have just said, oh, this just, no. And you'd be really pissed off if Love Guaranteed were to get even remotely as many viewers as Thinking of Ending Things. I'm watching it thinking, oh, Charlie's really, this has got to be so painful.
You know, it's one of those right off the bat. I notice it's a wrong year film. You remember when like Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn interned at Google, and it was like a decade too late making fun of Google. Love Guaranteed is probably 15 years too late. It's making fun. It's poking at online dating, which is not new. And Rachel Lee Cook plays a lawyer who doesn't know anything about online dating. She's actually, you know, she says, what do you mean people post pictures that don't represent the real them? Why would they post pictures that don't look like them? And it's like, okay, how stale is that in 2020 to have some person doesn't know what the first thing about online dating? And it's just in the wrong year. It's 15 years too late. I learned the word lumbersexual. It takes place in Seattle, but it pulled the 50 Shades. The exteriors, the skyline shots take place in Seattle, but it's Vancouver, British Columbia. Seattle actually doesn't look like that when you're walking around it. It makes fun of Gwyneth Paltrow, which I'm fine with. There's no villain really in it, but if there was, it'd be Gwyneth Paltrow, I guess, but played by Heather Graham.
Gwyneth Paltrow's not in this film.
No, she's not, but Heather Graham's playing Gwyneth Paltrow. Straight 100%.
Is that?
Absolutely. Okay. It's supposed to be this namaste. And she just kind of gets, she just gets it wrong. Hannah, you're right. I did not like Love Guaranteed because it has this line in it. To find love, you got to dive deeper. What if I sink? What if you swim? Oh, my God.
Oh, spoiler alert. Come on.
What? You don't know who's saying that. You have no idea.
No, it's a bit of a, it's weak. Even by Netflix rom-com standards, it's just weak. And so you've got Rachel Lee Cook playing this lawyer, and she's this earnest do-gooder of a lawyer, but it's that typical, her little small office is in jeopardy of going under because they need a paying client. And so in walks Damon Wayans Jr. is this guy, Nick, who is, willing to pay a hefty amount to have her take his case. And his case being that he wants to sue this online dating site, Love Guaranteed, that guarantees that if you follow all the fine print, you will find love. And he follows the fine print. He goes on 1,000 dates, morning, noon, and night, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And there's no love match. And so he wants his money back. He wants damages as well. And, and then of course, the two main characters, there's some attraction between them. I hesitate to say chemistry because I did not feel any real chemistry between these actors. I mean, they're both individually fine in their performances, but I did not feel any real love connection. And it is as meet cute cliche as you could possibly get. And so you've got Susan's office mates who just want to see her find love and happiness and who create an online profile for her. And then there's the pregnant sister and brother-in-law, totally domesticated, who live next door and just want her to find love and happiness. And then there's Susan and Nick themselves who, you know, they've either shunned dating or been burned by heartbreak. And so almost immediately they're like drawn to each other. But then the question is, you know, can this lawyer and client act on their feelings for each other without jeopardizing the case? And that's really then what this becomes. In short order, well before any character development or chemistry can occur, this film just ends sort of exactly the way you would expect it to. And so, yeah, you're right. There are no real villains, very light on stakes, light on the drama, kind of light on the comedy. And so, you know, they're just, for me, there are too many other just really good rom-coms out there that I'd rather rewatch rather than, you know, say that this is something that needs to be added to the queue. So, although I will say, I mean, it opens the first 30 seconds and you're like, it looks like it has the surface look and feel of your standard feel good rom-com. And so I had high hopes for it in the first 5 minutes. But then in the end, kind of lame, predictable, and I have a Tiffany song stuck in my head, and that's not always a good thing.
You know, if there was a movie making fun of rom-coms, it would be this movie. I don't remember the title, but remember we watched a movie where girl flies to New Zealand because she won a house. She's going to sell
in.
It.
Yeah,
and then
they fix
it up, and then they fall in love. It's that movie. It's the same thing, just like in Seattle, Vancouver, with lawyers this time. It's the same movie. It's they don't like each other, and then they like each other. She's never seen The Fugitive. He doesn't know who Tiffany is. I wonder if they'll introduce each other to those things. Nick, donates his time for the old folks here who can't afford physical therapy. Oh, my God. God, Hannah, this movie's really bad. It was good to see Rachel Lee Cook again, I suppose. She's all right.
Yeah, that's just it. They deserve better. The actors deserved better.
Well, Damon Wayans Jr. might not, but Rachel Lee Cook does.
Yeah, right. I thought he was perfectly, you know, charming in this role. It's hard when you have nobody to dislike. You knew where it had to go. Even with the Heather Graham character as the, you know, sort of namaste head of Love Guaranteed, she was, you know, unlikable for maybe 30 seconds. And then you kind of gave her a pass. It's just weak as rom-coms go.
Speaking of, you know where it's going to go. Let's talk about Critical Thinking, the directorial debut of Mr. John Leguizamo and starring Mr. John Leguizamo. 1998, fine year 1998. We've already talked about it on this episode. Chess bros from Miami inner city urban core start doing very well at chess and start bumming up against other high schools and atmospheres they don't belong in. So think Stand and Deliver. Think Dangerous Minds. Think Queen of Katwe. Chess taking you places where you're not supposed to go. Combine it all up into a ball of schmaltz, and you've got Critical Thinking. Better than Love Guaranteed. But I critically also did not care for this film, Hannah.
Yeah, Critical Thinking is another one of those sports underdog dramas that we have seen over and over and over again. So there was just nothing special about this one. I mean, the message is special. You've got this, you know, very engaged teacher who just believes in these kids, and he takes these five Latinx and Black teenagers from this tough ghetto in Miami into the national chess championships. For that part, it's very inspirational because it's based on a true story. And it's, it, but it's, I wouldn't say it's schmaltzy because it was almost too gritty to be schmaltzy. And so I do think it had a grittier indie tone than some of the others that, than something like Queen of Katwe that was a, you know, a Disney sports drama about a girl from Uganda who managed to become an international chess champion. And remember also in 2016, I remember us talking, and you're right, we have been doing this a while, talking about the Dark Horse. Do you remember that one?
New Zealand again.
Yeah, so that was an indie from New Zealand, and I remember really liking that one. Also, I believe it was based on a true story, and it was a chess champion with bipolar disorder who took this group of underprivileged kids to the national championships. And I think that one was so much stronger when you're just sort of looking for something that that just sort of takes on a different approach.
And I forgot about that movie. Yeah. I completely forgot about that movie.
Yeah. In fact, I believe we even had the Dark Horse wine to go with it. So taking us back to when we actually were doing this side by side and could share a bottle of wine. Yeah, so critical thinking, you know, bravo, John Leguizamo. I understand, like, just wanting to give some props to the teacher that he plays, Mr. Martinez, for, you know, for just kind of being one of those teachers that sees more in these kids than anyone else around them.
His performance is so forced. He puts on those wigs and he's like, oh, but then he did this move. And then he puts on another wig and then he did this move. It's just so, not play well.
Well, and that might have been one of the drawbacks of trying to direct your first film and star in it at the same time. I wanted it, again, sort of like Love Guaranteed. I wanted it to be better because it was in my wheelhouse. But yeah, we've seen Mulan before. We've seen this one.
Yeah, and I really like the Dark Horse and Queen of Katwe far better actually than this one. This is just trite. Yeah. You know, one of them's gonna, you know, get involved with drugs, and you know one of them's gonna have trouble at home, and you know blah 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 blah. You just know it all. You know it all before you see anything. You just know it. The principal is ridiculous, by the way. What a terribly written character.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I would say, hey, if you never saw The Dark Horse from 2016 or Queen of Katwe, also from 2016. Dig those up instead, because they're just going to be the same kind of story, but I think ultimately told in a more uplifting and enjoyable sort of way.
All right. Well, that about covers it. So therefore, you know, the takeaway from this episode is turn on Netflix and go watch I'm Thinking of Ending Things. That's the takeaway. That's checkmate.
My takeaway would be Mulan is still going to be the more enjoyable for the masses.
Let me save you $30 on that one and be like,
No, see, you haven't seen it, so you can't say.
I cannot say. But I support Hong Kong democracy, so I can't say, because I can't see it.
I support Hong Kong democracy, but I'm trying not to let that color my view of Mulan. But I do want to mention, though, that next week we really, really need all of our listeners to tune in somewhat real time, because I know a lot of people, whether you listen on Radio St. Pete or on any of your favorite podcast platforms, you don't want to wait too long to catch next week's episode after we put it out there, because we're going to have, Charlie, I think it's our very first promotional giveaway.
Ooh, you mean freebies?
Freebies. And so we will be announcing next week a giveaway that we're going to have in conjunction with a new Warner Brothers online series about some of that studio's most prominent filmmakers. So we're talking the likes of Scorsese and Eastwood and Kubrick. So you'll want to tune in for that. And Charlie, what will they possibly win?
Digital links. That's hot. In this day and age, digital links. That's currency, man.
But digital links to
awesome canon films from those directors.
Excellent. So, you know, I think if there's no other reason to tune in other than to sort of figure out whether or not we agree on certain things and whether our cats decide to make appearances, then next week you'll want to find out about our giveaway. So that's, I think that'll do it pretty much for this edition of the Cinema Clash. Thanks so much, as always, for listening. Stay safe, everybody. Enjoy the holiday weekend. Keep an appropriate distance. And please wear a mask.
Thank you.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.